I'm going to do some quick introductions really quick. I scraped the internet to find some most embarrassing things. Iris Veneration, right to my left. She is the director and founder of Invest Club for Women, which is now Invest Club. So diverse. But it's still a fabulous real estate investment club. She began her full-time real estate investing career back in 2003 when she quit her six-figure corporate job in mortgage finance because now she's a real estate investor. She has been a property manager, she's wholesale, she's flipped over 200 properties in Southern California and out of state, and I think she's one of the most energetic bright spots in our industry here in Southern California. She's going to need all that energy because she has a new set of twins. And I asked her this morning, how are you looking so fresh and ready today? Good on you.
I don't know. It's a miracle.
And Patrick Diamond, he's a real estate entrepreneur and life business coach based in Southern California, but that's about to change, sounds like. During the economic collapse, he found himself homeless and living on Skid Row. And since then, it's only not been a decade, he's facilitated nearly 1,000 guest experiences on Airbnb and founded Wrightwood Resort in 2016. He's now exploring expansions outside of California and about to take advantage of his bilingual skills in Spanish. Are you going to be based out of Mexico?
I think so.
Maybe.
We'll see. I'll let you know in December.
One of the reasons I asked these two to be here today is because they have approached the vacation rental space in two very different ways. So we decided to... I gave them a very annoying, long outline. As you can see, this is a very long chapter. And we decided to do this inner sort of radio style to where we're going to go back and forth because they're coming at it from very different viewpoints. And then a little bit later, we're going to bring in Shayna, but we've got some stuff to get through before we get there. So I'm not going to go through the history. All you need to know is vacation rentals are really nothing new. They've been around since the 1600s. But the internet has definitely changed the game. So we are now to a point, if you go to page 28, chart 1-1, the National New and Existing Home Sales, this is a report put out by the National Association of Realtors this year. You're going to see, interestingly enough, that no surprise, primary residences have increased. This is in thousands, by the way. Vacation properties have actually decreased for the last 3 years. Investment properties have increased. Right below that, you've got the medium home sales price by intended use. No surprise there. Location by property I thought was pretty interesting. If it's a primary residence, suburbs, great. I was surprised to see vacation properties were pretty even, even in rural towns. So it's time to get creative, and we'll talk about experiences. Those are leading the way. And then investment properties, of course, suburbs, not too big of a surprise there. 1.4, it shows the type of location among vacation properties, beach. I'm Irish, y'all. This beach life is wasted on me, but there you go. I burn. 1.5, short-term rental experience. What's interesting about why they did it this way is the categories. You can technically have a vacation rental as a primary residence, people renting out a couch or a room or whatnot. The very top, yes, tried, did rent it in 2016, but don't plan to do it in 2017. The vacation, the second home, people who had vacation houses, apparently they had the worst experiences. People messing up their vacation homes. They're not coming back as often as the primary resident user or the investor. But at the very bottom, no, did not rent in 2016, but they plan to in 2017. And by far, the investment category, 21% of investors who are buying properties were planning on using the strategy. So the first question is, are you seeing that? Are a lot more investors really tipping into the vacation rental space?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a... Well, for me as an investor, I looked at this arena because I wanted to take some of the rentals that I had and see if I could double or even triple the cash flow. And so I found this. So I would have to say when I entered this space, let me just back up by saying that I also use Airbnb and I find it. How many of you in the room actually have used Airbnb? Yeah, so quite a few, right? Mm-hmm. And how many of you actually own or run an Airbnb? Okay, a lot less.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting to me. But I was an Airbnb user, and I my personality is such that I actually like, you know, hosting people and meeting people being hospitable. And so I thought, okay, this is something that I can do. And so since I started staying at them, I'm like, well, how can I create this experience in some of the properties that I own? So I just want to say that when I started becoming a host for Airbnb, I did it with properties that I already owned. And my experiment was, how can I double or triple the cash flow? How do I make it worth my while? And I don't know about you, but I'm a serial entrepreneur. And so what I found using this platform was this is one of the platforms or a place where you can start a business, which is a rental, and have it be profitable in the first month. You know, and I found that extremely incredible and amazing. And so I am meeting a lot more investors these days that are actually using this platform to I have some cautionary tales about this if you're planning on investing in vacation rentals and using, you know, this to make a cash flow. I know Derek talked a little bit about this in his segment, but I always tell people when you buy a rental and you plan to do Airbnb, for me, I always wanted to make sure that it still worked as a long-term rental, okay? And I use the platform, again, let me just emphasize, to double or triple my rents. And if you want, I can go over numbers about that later.
Okay.
And I think that kind of speaks to why you and I have a different approach, mm-hmm. Even though we end up in the same place. You know, for me, I think I've started also being a serial entrepreneur, but one who had fallen into the gutter. I think that for me, you know, I started from a point of necessity. I didn't even know that I was a real estate investor until I had been doing Airbnb for like 2 years. Because 8 months before I started my first Airbnb, I was homeless. And I had been homeless for a year and a half. I literally had been living on Skid Row. And so for me, it was a low barrier to entry to get back into entrepreneurialism. And so I tend to gravitate towards the investor who, and now being a serial real estate investor and entrepreneur, I tend to gravitate towards those people who are getting started for kind of different reasons. Like you had the houses. Like I had never even, at that point, I thought that I would be dead in 2 years. So I didn't even think that I would ever own a house, which is funny now. But so I think that that speaks to it. And now, so I gravitate towards the people who, we have a company or a name called Airbnb Rescue. So I like to work with people who are in dire straits and they need to figure out a way to save their home. But also investors who have an asset that has major issues and they're trying to figure out what to do with it.
When you say Airbnb Rescue, just really quick, you're not talking about like a TV show like The Bars where they come in, they're like, you were doing this so wrong.
That was, I think, the original concept, but it just...
people saving their homes, so they're living in a home and how to stay in there.
Yeah.
Got it.
Free, yeah, exactly. Okay. But I definitely, I get more and more exposure and I'm out there in front of more and more people, I definitely see a lot more people getting excited about it. And I always tell people, if you can, to start in your home. Like, just rent a room in your home. And a lot of my students have done that, and they've had great success from it.
So. I'm not going to lie. That sounds terrible to me. Let's move forward, because we have a lot of ground to cover. So it's a good... Number three, the strategy. And this, Patrick, you gave me this, and I really liked how you framed this. You're in the right place if you're trying vacation rentals, but not number one in the market, looking to diversify into other investments, or you're totally new and exploring options. You're in the wrong place if you're a slumlord, are you trying to get rich quick, or you're horrible at delegating?
That last one's really important.
Is it really? I was going to ask you, which is the most important in your opinion right now?
I think it's always just like anything else. And we in real estate investing or in any business, if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to learn to delegate. And we all know everybody in this room has at some point not delegated well. They've ended up getting really worn out. Or we all know somebody who has come into real estate investing, usually doing flips, and then they end up burning out of it because they tried to do everything themselves. And one of the biggest reason that we lose hosts on the Airbnb platform is because of host burnout. So, and that just all comes down to systems. So if you're not good at delegating and setting up systems, if you're a big control freak and want to do it all on your own, I mean, you'll end up, you burned out a bit too, didn't you? I mean, I burned out in my first year. I burned out in the first year. And luckily, I recovered.
So if our stomach's hurting and we're having heart palpitations right now, this might not be the strategy for us.
Yeah, if you're like such a control freak that you can't think of letting it go, yeah. Delegating is very critical.
Okay, let me, I just want to clarify something. You know, Patrick and I talk a lot about Airbnb, and I just want everyone to know that we don't work for Airbnb or we don't. There's a lot of vacation rental online platforms out there that are really good. VRBO, HomeAway, FlipKey, you know, that even have more traffic, as you'll see in some of the charts later on, online. And I just have to say that, you know, I love the Airbnb platform because it makes it very easy. So someone who's just starting out, I mean, certainly there are Airbnb and the whole short-term vacation rental thing is blowing up right now. So as you can imagine, when anything is popular like this, there's a, I call it the picks and axes. There's so many services now out there that can help you run this business. So you can take this vacation rental business and be as hands-on as you want or as hands-off as you want as well. Now, I want to go back to what Patrick said. You know, I think it's really important if you're considering this platform, definitely start with something either in your house or one of your rentals so you can see how it works. I'll even go far enough to say, go stay in one and see what works for you. Yep. And you can easily see by that example how you can create your own place, you know, where a guest can stay. And you know, if you have questions as far, I mean, there's all kinds of fears, obviously, that come into this. Do I want to let these strangers in my house? Are they going to ruin everything? What if they break something? Stuff like that. And I can tell you this, the Airbnb platform, as well as some of the other online platforms, make it really easy and also protect you. So it's and the barrier of entry is very, very low. And I wish Patrick would share his story, but you know, he went from homeless to starting an Airbnb and became one of the top hosts in a very short period of time.
I think what we're going to do is we're going to end up doing a radio show afterward to capture that, because it is important. And one of the things I always like to ask is, where do you come from? Where do you start? I used to be an actor in New York City, and now I'm a landlord. It's just strange. But everybody gravitates toward different people, and depending on your personality, there might be somebody who's a complete introvert who's just sweating right now, thinking about greeting people at the door. Welcome to the property. Will you please give me a 5-star rating? It's just stressful.
Okay, I love that you bring that up, because my goal as an entrepreneur, I mean, yes, I said earlier, my personality is such, I would love to host you and meet everyone and show you all the places, but my goal today with my Airbnbs is to spend as little amount of time as possible and make as much money as possible. Now, Patrick has a different viewpoint, so you can go either way, but my whole thing is, I don't want to meet you. Okay? I want you to book my place, I want you to leave me a 5-star review, and I don't want to meet you. The less interaction I have with you, the better. And to me, that's more passive to me. I like that. And like I mentioned, if I can, you know, take a rental that, I'll give you an example, a real quick example. I have a condo in Orange, 2-bedroom, 2-bath. Market rent, $1,750. Okay, so I can rent that. I will cash flow. My loan's really low on it, along with the HOA. But as Airbnb, you know, with an Airbnb as a short-term rental, I can, in the low season, I'm making $3,500 a month. In the high season, up to $6,000 or $7,000. So tell me, I mean, is it worth the hassle of creating and putting all that those pieces into place? To me, I think so. And like I said, in the first month, profitable. I mean, it's just, I've never been in a business like this where you can turn it that quickly.
You're setting me up so good.
And I think that I...
All right, yeah. Go for it.
Okay. I think that I can, like, so, and we there's similarities in our strategies. We just diverge at a certain point, which comes to experience. But really, I mean, for me, just to give you a real quick back shot. So in my first year, my first unit, I was renting, I ended up master leasing. So you don't have to own the property, but do it right, do it legally, and make sure you're on the up and up 100%. So I was renting an apartment for $1,400 a month. Little crappy apartment in Koreatown. It was like 900 square feet. Mm-hmm. Nothing special at all about it. We're talking like below contractor grade, pretty much fixtures all around. Like the stuff that fell off the contractor grade truck ended up there. And I furnished the entire place. Literally, I didn't even have a car at the time. So we were driving around Beverly Hills because we knew that that was where good stuff was laying on the side of the street. And we borrowed my friend's old Range Rover. It was this old beat up Range Rover. And, you know, we would pull in with like a futon hanging out the back. So I think the whole thing in the first year, I spent maybe $250 on furnishing. And I ended up making $56,000 that first year on a $1,400 unit. So that I think that ties into...
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
It was awesome.
I'm glad we started with those stories so people can hear the numbers. And I thought that's an ingenious way to get started because I have a lot of people that are stressed out not knowing where to start. Yeah. They're just getting and they don't have the money. And I'm glad you brought that
it's
up.
It's fun, too. Yeah. Well, doing it in Mexico now as well.
Well, let's go to page 30. We're going to look at number 4, finding the right inventory. I'm not going to spend too much time on the charts, but I want you to go now to page 44, and I just want to share with you, AirDNA worked with us and gave us a ton of data. This doesn't look like a ton of information, and they have way more than I've even provided in this, but we've pulled some cities, and I just want to explain the map, so if you're getting excited and maybe you just want to see if there's a possibility as we go through this information, you know what you're looking at. So on page 44, you're going to see an explanation, and we're just going to look at San Diego right next door to it. So the map in the top left quadrant of 1.9 in San Diego, you're going to see colors. Purple is the entire home dots, dark blue is a private room, and light blue is shared housing. What's cool about this, you basically see where they're located and where they're the most popular. The market grade, you'll see up at the very top, it says a B+. AirDNA has an algorithm, and it's looking at several things, and I want you to be very careful about a few things. Investability, a high score means good investment opportunity by comparing purchase price to rental income. That sounds all fine and good, so you can see in San Diego, they think it's a horrible time to buy. What's interesting about the regulation right underneath, a high score means less regulation, but please beware, this is an algorithm that looks at behavior of property owners. So as was just brought up by Derek, they just changed the law. They're locking down how many times in San Diego, or you can look at Anaheim. Anaheim just published an extension, but as I understand it, as of 2021, you have to convert it back to a long-term rental or you better sell the property. You will no longer have the right to have a permit in the city of Anaheim to do long-term rentals. Did you know that?
Yeah. There was still like a discrepancy between a home share and just a straight short.
Oh, we'll get there. Yes. Yeah. But short-term vacation rentals, they're not wanting those in the area anymore. Below that, seasonality. High score means low seasonality. So when you get into places like Palm Springs, the difference in rents is staggering. Where if you look here in San Diego, you'll see a chart in a second, it'll make a lot more sense. Revenue growth, if it's increasing over time, and then rental demand, a high score means high travel demand. The next big bullet underneath, the rental type, so now we're into the little round squares. The breakdown of percentage of the kind of homes that are being offered in the area, right next to that is the rental size, so the number of bedrooms. So maybe if you're in a place like Hawaii, as an example, bigger homes because it's a destination and big families are going there. We've done that before. It's been awesome. Where maybe if you're in your downtown LA, a condo is exactly what you want. Right next to that is host. You're looking at the professional competition. Are these mom and pops? Are these super hosts? Like, are you about to get spanked if you think you're going to come in all busted? You better be aware. Right beneath that, the average daily rate, you can see how that changes over time. That's really cool to see and important information to have. Right next to that is the occupancy rate, so the average percentage of time the properties are booked. Revenue, you can see in San Diego in summer, you're getting around $4,000, and in winter months, it's half that. And I love the average, so average means nothing. On average, $3,500, especially if they change the rules in the high season. That's a bummer. And then the total cumulative rentals shows you the number of vacation rentals that are growing in the market. So you can see how quickly this has grown. And just because I'm nerdy, we've also done some research, the bullets under the news, for at least I think we did like 14 or 15 different cities. So as we go through the information, I'm not going to go through each of these cities. You can do that. Depending on where you're looking at. I just wanted to make sure you knew it was there. But going back to page 30, doing your research. I mean, AirDNA, what a great resource.
Firstly, I have to say, Aaron, this is incredible that you were able to compile all this. You know, I tell people, yes, you need to do your research, you need to do your due diligence. And when I did it, you know, my due diligence was simple. I went on Airbnb, I pulled up the area that I was thinking of putting an Airbnb in, and I just looked up, you know, whatever, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-baths or 2-bedroom, 2-baths or whatever it was that I was considering creating an Airbnb in, and just looking at what their average rental, I mean, you can just see it. Just like, you know, if you were to do a Redfin or a Zillow, you know, you could look at what things are selling for or what they're renting. And nowadays, you know, especially if you're looking to invest in maybe areas that are not near you, out of state, out of the country even, you know, there are great websites like AirDNA, and you mentioned there's Mashable, there's
Mashvisor, Everbook.com,
Everbook.com, that you can actually pull data in different areas, which is so helpful. But there's something I do want to, I think this data that you compiled in here by city is really important. And it's also very concerning because, like, if you look at Anaheim, their Airbnb rating is A. So that would just, you would think, let's go buy there, right? Let's go set up some vacation rentals there. But like as Aaron mentioned, you know, you got to be careful. You still got to look at the local ordinances and what's happening in the area. Maybe, you know, get in touch with other hosts that are in the area because this is going to be outlawed. It's A because, you know, the rental rates are good and there's not very many rentals left because they've slowly had to expire them.
Yep.
And, you know, and then as we move along, it's not going to be, so be careful when you see an A rating and just make sure to look behind the lines, behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, and so. Following up on that too, I mean, this is one thing I tell my students, it's very critical, is that this is, again, as Aaron mentioned, this is based on an algorithm. So, I mean, how many of you in the room would go and try and tell an investor what your ARV is on something based on a Z estimate, and that would be the only place you would look at it. I mean, and I see people doing this. I mean, people come to me and they're like, hey, I have a deal. And I'm like, oh, great, show me the numbers. Oh, where'd you get these numbers? Oh, I did it on AirDNA. And I'm like,
go
back
into your
home.
Got a condo in Barstow. I'm the only one.
Yeah, but I mean, it's super, super critical. I mean, we have a whole tree of things that on each one we look for. One thing is we look at what are existing regulation. So I'm blessed to have a business partner who's an attorney, and he loves things like that. So that part is easy, but as far as but because he just goes and checks on that. But then beyond that, it's like what's coming down the pipeline. So you have to search what is going on. One search term that I use is Airbnb, and then I insert the name of the community, and then I hit PLUM. I put that in all caps. Because that's the planning and land use office. And I'll do short-term rental, planning and land use. I'll spell it out. I do a whole bunch of searches because I've gotten into some trouble because I didn't search in a diverse and broad enough manner to find out what was coming down the pipeline, because it's not necessarily just what is already in planning and land use, for instance, what they're about to see. It's also neighborhood associations. It's, for instance, you can get in on the Nextdoor app, for instance, or get into, sometimes we'll sneak into Facebook groups for communities, and you just sit like a fly on the wall, because you'll find out if there's a tidal wave that's coming in that area. And so it's really super critical. Do not, please, I mean, this is great data. AirDNA is great. I love it.
Yeah.
But for me, oftentimes, it's a preliminary screen to go through. So I just want to make that really clear, because this is something that you have to research, and your due diligence is more broad.
And there's all those sub-bullets there that talk about all the different categories, and what we're talking about is the sub-bullet right there that says algorithms versus personal investigation. Mm-hmm. So you can't trust it. It's a great place to start, especially when you have a history of the rental history and stuff like that, so you can see the... You would hate to buy a property, you know, in Palm Springs in peak season and not do any homework, finding out you can only have one, and you're locked in with only so many times that you can rent it out every year.
I've done that.
And
it's not fun.
Yeah.
Brutal. It's not fun.
Yeah, don't do that.
When you have it after for a while and you're not making any money.
All right. So long story short, make sure you do your homework, and let's go on to things consider, because this is going to be a fun part. Regulation and politics. We've already talked about that a lot. So it doesn't just matter what the ordinance is now about short-term rentals. You're going to want to do some research. Real quick. Yes, it is. It is partly. I know the mayor in Palm Springs. I spent a lot of time with some guy who just fixed the pools the last time I was down there. And the old mayor of Palm Springs, I guess, held a ton of them. He ended up selling all of them. But the hospitality industry started lobbying. Yes, it's part that. But we're going to talk about this a lot in accessory dwelling unit. I think it's only going to get worse, because as they're having to create ordinances around accessory dwelling units, part of the whole thing about ADUs is to create affordable living. So the intent was never to make vacation rentals possible. It's interesting. And, so we're going to cover that a lot more. But
and a good tie, while we're in the politics, a good tie into that is, you know, when we're talking about the what the hospitality industry is doing to kind of cut at the base of Airbnb and other short-term rental companies, we're seeing Airbnb being a little bit further ahead of them. Mm-hmm. I think kind of what happened with Uber and the taxi industry is that they thought, oh no, we're good. You know, we're number one. Nobody's ever gonna. We're the taxi. You know, we're the taxi labor union. Yeah, you can't touch us. And then fast forward a couple years later, 60% reduction in the taxi workforce. So one of the great things that Airbnb has done is the Airbnb Political Action Committee. And Airbnb has been ahead of, and we'll talk a little bit about the different profiles that are behind some of the, and the cultures that are behind these different brands, like VRBO, HomeAway, Airbnb. And Airbnb takes, it is a community-based organization. That's what they start from. And so this Political Action Committee was really an amazing thing for them to start. Up until recently, I was on the board of tourism for the Inland Empire for Riverside County, San Bernardino County. And one of the projects that I worked on was spearheading getting the TOT, which is transient occupancy tax, to, like, for instance, this hotel here where we're at. Every night, we all know that there's these major taxes that come onto a room rate. And that's a major revenue source for a municipality or a county. And so in LA, one of the best things that Airbnb did about 3 years ago mm-hmm. was to go and say, hey, we realize that forever there's been all of these short-term rentals, vacation rentals that people have never been paying taxes on. So how about this LA County? Would it help you if we would just attach it to every reservation? Overnight, literally, the coffers of LA County and LA City increased by millions of dollars. And so, that, I mean, what a great, smart thing that they mm-hmm. did. And so that's just, I thought that was a great question. It's a great example of how, behind the scenes, Airbnb specifically is combating some of this. Just so you know that there are some things going on that help to even out the playing field.
And I just want to add to that real quick. You know, as a host, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, now I have to cover all these taxes. Believe it or not, your guest pays those taxes. So it has no effect on you as a host.
And it's probably less offensive for the user. They're almost expecting to pay it. And so it's not, you know, like, okay, I have to pay taxes. So regulation politics, we're talking from state down to local, down to the neighborhood. You really have to know your stuff and do your homework. Those neighborhood groups are no joke. I watched a project in Riverside, something that was zoned industrial, and this neighborhood group held up a project, even though it was zoned. I don't know how the city has not been sued, to be honest with you. It got stopped, and it's still stopped, and it hasn't moved forward because a community group got together and complained to the council member. You just have to almost assume that you're going to run in. You just better know going in.
That's just doing your homework. Just search.
All right. I'm excited about this one, the experience. Because both it makes me laugh because when I first talked to Iris about it, she's like, it's the beach, it's a condo, have a good time. And you're just like, everything.
This is the major difference between Iris and I. Yeah.
So do you have anything that you would consider like an experience? You guys are all going to get really tired of hearing that word. What's the highest experience level that we can expect from?
Let's talk about your Hawaiian Gardens house, Iris. With the tanning garden in the back.
So for me, you know, when I set up my Airbnbs, the most that you're going to, okay, let me just start by saying this. I use Airbnb, and when I search for a place to stay, I'm looking for something that's in the area I want to be in, and that's the right size and the right price, okay? It helps if the host is a super host. It helps if it's nice and it looks clean. I want to see that. But all the other stuff, I'm probably going to whatever, Disneyland or skiing or whatever it is. So the house has to be comfortable and it has to look clean. So I translated that into my Airbnbs. And so for me, I knew that I would have travelers, I'd have families. All my Airbnbs are close to Disneyland. So I figured people would be coming in and have late flights. So the biggest thing I would leave for them is like a gift basket with a couple waters and maybe a couple snacks, a couple granola bars. So, because if they came in late at night, you know, they won't have time to go to the grocery store or whatnot. And then, of course, with every rental, you know, unit, they have to have all the, you know, the kitchen stuff, you know, coffee, a coffee maker, things like that. That's all basic stuff, right? The towels and just stuff that you would find in a hotel, right? That. So the biggest thing I would do is, you know, again, leave a simple basket that my cleaner would set up. You know, give her some extra waters and make sure to put four waters and a couple bags of chips. That was it. And if they emailed me and said, oh, they were coming for this occasion or whatnot, I will tell her, okay, leave a card, a birthday card, enjoy your birthday or something, if I knew about it, right? But other than that, that was it. And so I figured they would come and they're there to just to rest, right? And then go enjoy themselves in Disneyland all day. So for me, it wasn't that big of a deal to create such a huge experience. And like some of my places are in condominium complexes, so they have amenities like pools and laundry facilities and things like that. So I didn't really worry too much about creating
the
experience.
It's very utilitarian. It's just, yeah. It does what it needs to do. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I think just as you're saying it, it kind of dawned on me like what it is. I mean, you have to realize that my experience in hospitality came from that before the downturn, I traveled so much. I mean, I was flying back and forth, two or three times a week. So I was a Marriott Platinum member, for instance. And so while I could stay at the Fairfield, which would be the more kind of the utilitarian, I oftentimes, because I worked for a finance company, I would... you know, my clients would be there and I'd stay in like a JW or the Riga Royale in New York. And so I really became just fascinated with the really exciting and cool parts of hospitality that you would get like as a platinum member that you wouldn't even, I mean, you're always upgraded to a suite. The fact that they know your name when you come in, everybody knows your name. They have, you know, your cheese plate ready for you. The concierge is especially, there's a whole profile that's kept for you. And so I got really into that, probably too much into that. But I think that conveyed into what I wanted to do with the Airbnb. And I think another reason that I became so into experience was because, remember, like, I didn't get to go to IKEA and buy everything. I was driving around throwing things into the back of an SUV that I found on the street.
You were being eclectic.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And everything that we do now has to have an eclectic feel to it. So even, for instance, we're doing these properties in Mexico City. And so this week, we're gearing up to start furnishing. And I have said, nothing will be new. Nothing. But these will be five-star properties. I view it as art. Every single one is an art form for me. And I love that. I love curating experiences for people that help them to have a much better experience. So like right now what we're doing in Mexico City is creating, you know, this whole ecosystem. Because now we're into hotels and bigger projects. But I mean, we have this whole ecosystem of tourism. So from the minute that they arrive at the airport to the time that they're dropped back off at the airport, we have curated the entire experience. So we end up getting, you know, we've engineered the whole thing, how they'll feel. We're big on how they feel. If you take one of my classes, for instance, I'm always talking about experience words. How do you feel in that property? How do you want people to feel when they leave? Because for me, again, it's more of an art form. And Airbnb because I pretty much exclusively work inside the Airbnb platform as well as our own resorts and hotels, they are selling experiences, not hotel rooms. It's based on experience. And the Airbnb experience side, which if you're familiar with the Airbnb platform, you know that they now have the Airbnb experiences, which are tours and other things that you can take. That is Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb, has come out and said that within the next 18 months, it's only been up for about a year and a half. So they are looking to that to eclipse their revenues from room rental. So especially if we're talking just about the Airbnb platform, it is important to have an experience. Now, at the same time, you know, Iris is very successful in it. She just does it in a different way. So it really is kind of a personal...
Let's put a number behind it, though. How much can... I mean, nobody wants to go to the mountains and all of a sudden feel like they're in a mobile home. You know, it's just... It's not... You want to go to the mountains because you want to feel like you're in the mountains. You don't want stucco. You want, you know, logs on the wall. How much more can you charge if there's an experience?
Well, if you look at the number one, so I encourage all of you to go, and if you're interested in the experience part, is to go and search what are the top Airbnb listings in the world. And the number one right now is the Malibu Dream Airstream, which is an Airstream that's perched on a cliff. That it's up in Malibu Creek or Malibu Canyon State Park. You won't find any of them in the top 10 being just a blasé house. They all have some big...
condo next to Disneyland.
So, and one of the things that I really love is if you look... Like, one day I was doing some research and I was reading through the reviews for the Malibu Dream Airstream. And by the way, it's fully 5 stars, number one in the world. You know, they're making about $260,000 a year. Yeah, on an Airstream.
Airstream.
Yeah. That'll work.
They cut the side of it out, put a glass wall in. And I'm reading this review and it's saying, yeah, you know, just know that sometimes mice and rats get in and they were running around in the night and kept us up. Still a 5-star review, by the way.
It was such a great experience.
Exactly.
I never got to sleep with rats in small quarters.
But that's one of the big things there, is one thing I've really come to learn is that experience will get you the 5 stars. Experience will get you to the top of the market. Experience will allow you to make mistakes like having rodents run around and keep your guests up. And they will pay $600 a night and leave a 5-star review.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not the same with my rentals.
Yeah, you know what? I think like for I love the experience thing. Don't get me wrong, but you know I can provide an experience just by paying attention to them. So through the Airbnb platform, you know they allow to have these saved messages, right? So a typical saved message would be, you know, how was your check-in? You know, is there anything you need? You know, how did everything go on your first night? Is there anything? Do you have any questions? I just make sure that email or that saved message goes out the day after they check in, and then they have this experience that we really care, right? Well, we do, you know.
Super critical.
But, you know, but we're paying attention, right? And then, you know, another saved message goes out maybe the day before they check out that says something to the tune of, you know, we hope you had a great experience. We just want to remind you, checkout is at 11, and we really look for a 5-star review. Please let us know if there's anything we could have done better or any suggestions. Just by asking them to leave you a 5-star review, they will, right? Only because they know you're paying attention and you're willing to listen, you know, to what they have to say. So just little tricks like that without, and that took, you know, 10 more seconds of my time. You know, if I was even doing it, I can have my assistant send that email out or, you know, that saved message out through the platform. I mean, it's just, and it's creating an experience still, but without having to be in front of them or, you know, have to create this whole, like,
yeah, that's such a critical point, Iris. Yeah. We talked about that. I mean, one number that just ties in with this, just to know how important it is what she's talking about. If you send them a message the day after they check in, let's say they're there for 3 days, if you send them a message after and say, I just want to check in and see how things are going, what's something I could get for you that could make your trip better? That's how I tend to phrase things. It's statistically, you're 60% more likely to have a 5-star review.
You guys are jumping ahead right now.
Sorry.
No, seriously, we got to make some serious progress because we are falling behind. But I do want to point out, I didn't think about this and it's not in the book. You've got 3 different levels of experience. You've got location, you've got property, and the actual customer service side that all plays into the 5-star reviews, which we will get to. So that's really good. Let's fly through some of these bullets because I think some of them you can read and they're obvious. Am I going to make money? We've already talked about there. Beware of regulation and politics, neighbors, and competition. So a lot of that's just the research side. Let's go to page 31, setting up the business. Permissions. We've got the different municipalities. We're going to talk a lot about that in the accessory dwelling unit chapters, where you should probably go. But has Airbnb in a lot of these vacation rental... Hey, vacation rental company's done a good job with prepping you? Are you going to sign on to Airbnb and they're like, alert, you just bought a property in a horrible place to own vacation rentals? Or do they let you suffer?
Rephrase that question, Aaron.
If you buy a property and think you're going to do Airbnb in Palm Springs and you don't know that there's a permit required, do they tell you?
Airbnb does, so there is a final screen on your listing
okay.
that says, make sure you comply with all local laws and regulations. Yeah, that's pretty much all you get.
But we're not checking for you.
Yeah, that's exactly, okay. It's the very last one. It talks about your responsibility.
That's a bummer.
As a host, yeah. And as far as like, now the very first screen will kind of help set expectations for what you might make in that area. So so they start with that, and then they end with, make sure you do your homework. Good luck. Yeah.
So the other things you have to know if you can host it or unhost it, basically if it's a primary residence or not. Some cities are requiring you have to have a primary residence if you're going to rent out a room. The time per year you can rent, how many times, the number of contracts you can have. So like in Palm Springs, you are limited to the number of times. You can rent all year, but you're locked in. Do you know off the top of your head how many?
Yeah, usually contracts? It's, a lot of them are, well, it's usually by night. So okay, a lot of them are 180 nights. But here's the thing, most of the regulations that we're seeing are pretty much just saying, without a resident on site. So it doesn't say that it has to be owner-occupied. It's just that you have to have a resident there. So pretty much, again, because I like to do the whole curated thing, we always have a host on site. And we like to work with people who are like disabled vets, or we're working in Mexico City with the people who are being deported from the U.S. and who are bicultural, bilingual. So we're able to, you can put a host there. So don't initially just think, oh, you know, I don't want to do that. You're much more likely to have a five-star review if you have someone on site.
I just keep getting ideas from you guys. You're very creative. Occupancy total, so the total number of people. Are you seeing cities regulate a lot of those? Like can't have 20?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, that was one of the harshest ones that originally came down was Palm Springs. And unfortunately, now we're seeing that many of the other municipalities are using, like San Bernardino County just adopted Palm Springs platform for the most part. And now you're more familiar with in a little bit out west. So Iris, you could speak to that.
I don't know personally if there's any regulations on the number of people in homes, but I can tell you this, as an owner of these properties, I'm finding that I'm having better luck with smaller properties. And the reason being is when I rent out a four-bedroom, three-bath house, well, guess what? The capacity on that is what, 10, 12?
20. Maybe, what are you talking
about?
Yeah,
right, maybe even 20 people, right? What I've learned from that is that having 12, 15 people in your house that's huge wear and tear. So I'm finding that I'm liking my Airbnbs in smaller units, like two bedroom, two bath, even a 2-1, 1-1 studios.
Absolutely.
Make great Airbnbs, right? Now in Disneyland, you know, I thought the big house platform would be great because it's really expensive for a family to come in and rent three hotel rooms near Disneyland. Right, so of course they would gravitate to renting a whole entire house. But again, for me, I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I want all those kids, you know, writing on the walls and it's just a lot of wear and tear, right? So and then I don't want to get into like discrimination and housing things like you
well,
can't. So.
Yeah, you can't do that. And by the way, just because the city allows it doesn't mean your HOA or the CC&R is where you live.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you just have
okay,
to do a lot of homework.
So I do want to address that because I know Derek talked about reading through your CC&R. So I have a couple Airbnbs that are in condos, and I was very careful. I read through every page of the CC&Rs to ensure that there was no verbiage discussing the not allowing short-term rentals. And so I made sure my CC&Rs did not state that. But let me caution you. Just because it doesn't state it in their CC&Rs that were written 30, 40, 50 years ago doesn't mean they can't, you know, create new regulation against that. So just
they don't have a good experience with you, too, if you're a horrible landlord.
Yeah, slumlords. Yeah.
Yep.
My motto is HOA run away. Yeah, I get people that call me all the time, like, I have a deal. And I'm like, okay, tell me about it. They're like, well, it's an HOA. And I'm like, okay.
one of the things we also have to be careful of is rent control. So it's going to be on in the November ballot. If the state relaxes the rent control rules, and you've got areas like San Diego that are going to apply rent control, assume vacation rentals are out. Mm-hmm. You're just not going to be able to do it. Licensees and fees. I've been, thank you for helping me with slides. Licensees and fees, business permits, any other permits that have surprised you or that are really different from city to city?
Yeah, you know, this can be really difficult because I went, like, one of my first, when I was expanding into San Bernardino County, I really thought I did my due diligence. I had a whole plan. I wrote up about all the fees we would need and everything. And the county didn't even know what I needed. So in the long run, it ended up that I was non-compliant, even though they had told me I was compliant. So what I now do is I now contact planning and land use. I now also contact the health department. Really? Yeah, because that was where I got caught up quite a few times, was the health department had things that I needed and that I didn't know. And then even I wasn't even, I didn't have a whole big permit in Wrightwood, which I needed. Wow. And I had called everybody. And so, yeah, you have to be really careful. Usually the main thing you need is that transient occupancy tax, you know, registration permit. You need a business license always. And sometimes you need a permit from the health department even.
Okay.
Well, I just had a recent experience where a lot of my Airbnbs are in the city of Orange, which I love because it's next to Anaheim, which is banning everything. So I have to say, like, all the cities around Anaheim are really getting a windfall from this, right? And it's still legal in Orange. It's still legal in Orange right now. But I remember calling on one of my units and saying, hey, you know, I'm considering turning this into a short-term rental. Can I get a business license? And they're like, no, we're not issuing them for short-term rentals anymore. I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? And they're like, well, you can still do it. There's just nothing formal yet that we've decided. So just make sure you talk to your neighbors. Right, this is from the city. and I had other units that had business licenses, and you know, I just remember a couple months later, I was getting letters in the mail saying, hey, can you turn in your business license on my already licensed Airbnb? And I'm like, what do you do with that? I'm like, no. So again, you know, things are pretty fluid in the cities. And just like the ADU issue, people are still trying to figure out how to regulate this. And again, if they can just get the taxes behind it and see that revenue, I think you might find, you know, some better results.
Okay. Building and housing standards, I mean, do you really just treat this like a rental as far as carbon monoxide, fire alarms, all that kind of stuff?
I'm like a safety Nazi, so I think it's so critical that, you know, because I always say, like, give people an amazing experience. If you give people a great experience, you will rise to number one. And if someone falls down and they break their arm in your listing, they're not exactly going to have a great experience to write about in the review. And so the really critical thing to keep in mind, the difference between a standard tenancy rental and a short-term rental is the length of exposure that people have in that property. So if, for instance, there's that crickety step, like on that one property that you have, maybe it's one of your rentals, and you know about it and you told your tenants about it when they first moved in. Now, that's still kind of risky, but remember that you might have people that are showing up at 11 o'clock at night, and if you haven't done a good job of lighting, you know, the number one largest lawsuit or liability claim in hospitality, by the way, is usually a lighting fault. It means that you have not lighted the way for your guests. Everybody remember the Hotel 6 will leave a light on for you? Who remembers that?
So they don't get sued. Yeah. I missed that part of the slogan.
Yeah. Well, they actually, I don't know if you guys remember that they actually got sued because they said you didn't leave the light on for us. And it's very, very common. So just, I mean, safety is super critical. Please don't discount this. My housekeepers are required to check the carbon monoxide and smoke detectors on every single stay. If I am there on site and I don't hear them beeping, they're gonna get in trouble. It's super critical. There's nothing more important than safety. I mean, it goes back to a gentleman who died in an Airbnb about 6 years ago in Texas, where this just really simple-looking tire swing was hanging from a tree. And, you know, it looked very inviting. And he went and he got on it, and he was killed and crushed in front of his whole family, who are there to have a great experience. And it's your responsibility. Anytime that you're bringing someone into your home, I don't care about insurance. I don't care about lawsuits. I mean, it's, think about the fact that this is someone's life, and you, we should all take that responsibility as real estate investors anyway. But it's super critical here because people don't have that 3 or 4 days to learn about that weird step or that there's no light over here.
Well, they don't know how to turn the lights on, too, because they're not used to the property.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, and that's even like one thing I always tell people. In bring your friends over and watch. Bring them over at night and count how many seconds does it take for them to turn on adequate lighting. I mean, it's little things like that, people who are not familiar with the property. It's your responsibility.
I do like insurance, so let's talk about insurance.
I love insurance, too. Yeah, I don't mean that.
I know, I'm just messing with you. When it comes to insurance, Airbnb has a $1 million host guarantee, and it covers $1 million in property damage. And it's so funny because I think there was an article in yesterday's paper about a $5 million property in San Francisco where somebody got in there, rented the, and they did a ton of damage. Drugs were involved. It was pretty crazy. So they'll cover up to a million in property damages and $1 million of host protection insurance. What does that mean?
You know, I think this is really important, and I think this is where Airbnb really shines in this area because they do offer this. And I just want to be really clear with this point here. They have a $1 million host guarantee. So that is, if you can charge a security deposit, you're allowed to do that. But if they destroy anything beyond that security deposit, or if they refuse to pay whatever claim you're making, Airbnb will step in and pay for the damages so long as it's warranted. And the other specific thing that I think people don't know is they also, in addition to that, they have a $1 million host guarantee, host protection, which is liability. So this is like real... this is where I think Airbnb separates themselves from the other platforms. And so this now brings into the question, well, do I also have to get a different vacation rental insurance for my property? I'm going to say with my stuff that's exclusively Airbnb, I don't bother. But if you also are promoting your stuff like on VRBO, HomeAway, if something happens and it's a HomeAway guest, you don't have that protection, so you
That's
need
so
to get
scary.
That.
That's so scary. So if you're not paying attention and you don't know which platform they're coming from,
So better to overinsure yourself. There is very specific vacation rental insurance available out there. CBiz is one of them, and
State Farm
proper,
has a great policy.
Proper.com, and then of course any of
as far as a standard policy,
your big insurance companies will have that too.
What happens if your insurance company finds out that you're not running a regular landlord policy? And you've turned it into a vacation rental. Have you heard any horror stories?
Yeah, I mean,
they just don't
cover
it.
How would you like to, like, you're driving down the car in your new Tesla, and then you realize you have the wrong policy after you crash it into a tree?
Yeah,
that's not going to be a good. It's similar to that. I mean, you know, they're not going to cover you. So it cracks me up sometimes. People are like, well, I have this policy. I'm just not going to tell them. Never in this business do anything in short-term rental. Always be 100% legal. Always be on the up and up.
Not worth it. All right. Under utilities, we're going to skip right down to the sub-bullet that says cable and internet. How important is it to not just... Is it just the internet fast connection because they're going to use YouTube and maybe their own Netflix, or do you always provide some kind of entertainment?
It depends on really on the rental. I'd like to hear what Iris does in hers.
Well, one thing I realized in setting up my Airbnbs is I thought in the beginning that I'd have to put a big-ass TV in all the rooms. And then I realized that, you know what, people bring their computers. People bring their iPads. I just make sure when I furnish them, there's one TV in the main place. And the most important thing, I remember reading a survey, the most important thing when travelers come, the most important thing they look for, high-speed internet. So if you just at least provide that, you may even be able to get rid of the cable because everyone has Hulu accounts or Netflix. Or you can set up, if you have a smart TV, you can set that all up with your account and they can just access that. High-speed internet is the number one amenity that you need to have. But, you know, I like that you brought up the utilities thing because this is an expense that you would normally not have if you were a landlord, let's say, renting a house, right? If I were to rent my house to a long-term tenant, they would be responsible for the utility, the water, electricity, trash, right? But as an Airbnb, I have to pay for all that. So that's just something that I think it's really important to know that that is something that you have to, you know, you'll have higher revenue, but you also have to work out how much utilities am I paying in order to get that higher revenue.
And I would follow up with, I agree with that on the internet for sure. I mean, I don't even put televisions in half of them anymore. And when I do, I have found that if I put the cable in, they actually will complain about the cable because they'll say it's too basic. So I've just said no more cable. And I just get these $79 Samsung DVD player boxes, which I know it's like a DVD player. But
what
it
are,
has...
What are those?
Yeah, they're cheap, but they have the smart part built in, and it's an easier one to use than usually what's built into the television, because it's all about ease of use, because you don't want to be getting calls at 11 o'clock at night, and like, I can't figure out how to make the thing work.
Oh.
Yeah, that's not fun. So again, it's like everything automated. So for me, just cable, and I do those, it's like $70 or $79 for the Samsung box. They have Netflix, and that's it. I've tried with the Amazon Fire Sticks, and then we've got all these charges and these codes that people have to use. Easy.
And if you're using Netflix and they start watching really weird things, and then you have kids stay the next time, and they're like, "Oh, the algorithms, what are you showing?"
I have the Airbnb the program on the Netflix broken down by guests, and then as the kids, and yeah.
Oh, that's smart. Okay, I'm not going to cover tax. It's just you need to know that every city could have different taxes. So Riverside just changed its sales tax. It's always changing, so just make sure you know which ones. And it's not always, Airbnb isn't always forced to charge it.
No, not at all. In most cases, they aren't. We just so happen to be in some of the largest metropolitan areas in the United States, so we're lucky. But if you're doing something especially out of state, most likely they will not collect it.
All right, let's go on to page 32, which is the rental agreement. So obviously, if you're working through some of these professional platforms, a lot of this was probably automated, but how long can they stay? Strategy versus legal. So as we're talking about short-term rental, something happens when they stay past a certain amount of time, right?
Right. So, you know, I learned that I don't want, well, on my short-term rentals, 14-day max is what I found is the golden ticket. Because I realized that if they stay longer than 14 days, then they start complaining more. Because then they start seeing everything. They start hearing all the noises or whatever it may be in the complex or the house or whatnot. And then I make sure that we don't go over 30 days because we are in California, right? And if you have a tenant that stays over 30 days in your house, now you are subject to
A guest, then they become a tenant.
Now they become a tenant and have tenant laws. So that's really
awkward.
Scary. So yeah, be
so
very careful.
So you technically have to evict them after 30 days?
You can. Yes. You might need to if they don't leave.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, so a lot of the the hotels that are in areas that are like in Hollywood, for instance, that are lower level hotels, they'll have people that you can rent it by the week. Mm-hmm. They always make everyone check out. And when I first moved to LA, I was renting a hotel like that, and I was like, they said that I had to leave. At that, I was like, why the hell do I have to leave? Like, I had to leave and come back. And now, of course, I totally get it. It's because that's the transient occupancy law.
And then I just want to add to that. It just came to mind. I've had situations where I actually wanted whoever was checked in to leave. Like, there was an issue, we had some miscommunication, and something was going sideways, and I just decided I don't want them to be my tenant anymore. They need to,
guest.
I'm terminating
guest.
Their
guest.
My guest. My guest. I don't want them to be my guest anymore. And believe it or not, Airbnb will help you step into the situation and get them out. They will get them out for you. And if it means finding them another place to stay, you know, booking another room or somewhere close by, they will do it. Or even pay for a local hotel.
Wow.
I've had Airbnb step in on my behalf to remove a guest that I didn't want in my property. And it could be for, you know, maybe they violated something. Maybe they had a party. Maybe that, you know, they disrupted, you know, the neighbors or something. To me, that is immediate termination. And so they will help you with that. So they're pretty hands-on in that sense.
And that kind of bridges into another thing we have here, which is the house rules. So the critical nature of the house rules. For instance, in the situation like Iris is talking about, you have to first lay out the expectations. And if there's one major thing that I would say is super, super critical in Airbnb and anything in hospitality is just remember that it's all expectations. Whatever expectations you set, you'd better make, or that's your five-star review. Your five-star review is based off of expectations. Now, the same thing is, for instance, if you're not comfortable with that guest, oftentimes they're not meeting our expectations as a host. And so Airbnb has made it easy now, and I know we are talking a lot about just Airbnb's platform, but all of them, they have the spot for house rules. don't just allow the tick boxes that they now have, like no smoking, this. Actually really think about it, like what are you comfortable with people doing and what are you uncomfortable with them doing? Because if you haven't laid that out, Airbnb's, the trip experience team is the team that Iris is talking about. They're gonna say, well, that's not in your house rules.
Wow.
So it works both ways.
So one of the reasons I wanted to put this here is so everybody sort of saw the setup process, because there are areas where it's fine. You don't have to go through the platforms. You can do this on your own. You can work with search engine optimization and try to rank via search to where you could just get paid directly. I really thought Airbnb and a lot of these platforms were doing that on purpose, knowing that we're in the world of voice search. We're asking our phones for things. We're not necessarily always going to be on a screen anymore. And the new influencers are the Alexa, Cortanas, and you know all these AI bots. So you can end up starting ranking, but this is also what you need to be aware are some of the things you've got to do. You know, the rental dates, the payment terms, maximum occupancy, like all these rules you're going to have to end up creating and making sure they're communicated clearly.
Yeah, and you really should have an attorney to do that because there's a lot of little nuances, and we are talking about the difference between a transient tenancy versus a standard tenancy. And I wanted to throw in just one thing here, like around with damage that we didn't mention earlier. One thing that you'll notice is that if you're considering going from standard tenancy rentals on one of your units into transient or guest, you know, short-term rentals, one thing that you will find that I was pleasantly surprised with, and I'm sure Iris will echo this as well, is you'll find that the amount of wear and tear on your property will dive by about 60 to 80% if you switch over to short-term. And why is that? And I like to play a lot into the psychology of the guest. So if you give me a deposit, you're going to be my landlord here, and so my deposit is going to be $1,000. So I'm going to give that to you, and I'm going to live in your place for 2 years. So this goes into like the 14-21 day stay, like where beyond that you don't really want to you don't want to have that, right? At some point, I'm going to forget about that $1,000. It's, you know, after little Jimmy kicks a hole in the wall and Susie has drawn, like, the family's portrait in crayon. At some point, you just are like, oh, well, it's, you know, we'll just take care of that down the road. Now, if I did that yesterday and Susie's drawing on the wall, I'm going to be having a heart attack as a tenant, right? So a lot of it, and it's important to consider the different psychology of a guest versus a tenant. And you should really try and get into that. And the one thing I've just been so surprised with, I mean, the amount, like, on our standard tenancy properties, it's through the roof, the amount. I mean, just someone moving in and out once. We know what that does to the walls. And everything, you know, bang, oh, we already lost our deposit. You know, half of them are thinking,
what do I have to lose?
yeah.
Why not more?
So I just wanted to throw that in because I think that's important.
And I just wanted, you know, the wear and tear, like I said, does go down when you have short-term tenancies because guess what? Your house gets cleaned 2-3 times a week, right? So you know the maintenance on that is really better if you think about it.
It's really awesome. That's one of the really
great
things.
And I know my cleaners die when I have someone stay 14 days. Oh. They're like, "Oh my god, it's so hard to clean." You know, they're so
I never allow anyone to stay more than 7 days without a cleaning. It's mandatory.
The after booking process, so there's several different ways we're going to cover this later on, depending on how you're managing it, but things that you're going to have to consider after they actually book the property, the check-in and out procedures, the pre-stay email, the property access, how they're going to get into the property, and then the welcome books. I mean, I've stayed in places where it was a one sheet on the refrigerator and then one very professionally managed place that had an iPad, that it was everything digital, and they sent me a video. It was like next level. So it is the entire experience all the way through.
You know, this is a lot of stuff, Aaron, but I can tell you, again, you know, from the Airbnb platform, they make all that so seamless and very, very easy. So, yes, you could do this on your own.
But why would you?
Why? Yeah, right. It's all in there. It's all
integrated.
Especially
if you're getting started. So let's go into setting up the space because we're going to get a little bit more into the space experience. We've talked a lot about finding the location, so let's get into the actual space. Demographics are important, and we'll go into, you know what, let's look really quick because it'll be easy for you that have the books on page 33. Let's cover the listing fee structure really fast. So you're going to see the HomeAway, which is VRBO, their subscription and what they're going to be charging guests. Airbnb, TripAdvisor, and FlipKey, and Booking.com. So you see the credit card fees you get charged, the subscription fees, and the booking as, and this is from the landlord. Does that all look correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then right beneath that, it's what the travelers are actually paying the platforms as well. So the service fee. So they're actually charging the service fee, and it's getting passed on to the guest, or is it coming out of yours?
So in Airbnb, they charge you as the host 3%, and then also the guest gets charged on their end as well.
Got it.
So they make money on both sides.
Got it. Okay.
But if you look at this, you know, Airbnb is on the lower end than all these other platforms.
Right. Okay. And just real quick, flip the page, and then we'll go back. But 1.8, the traffic and notes on the listing sites, I want you to see. It's really hard to just create a website and get millions of views to it, but I also want you to see the notes that we created on the kind of people that come there. So HomeAway, the core audience is the vacation traveler. 7 night stays are very common. Airbnb, a lot of younger travelers are there, or corporate, so they're open a little bit more to sharing. Where if you're going to a TripAdvisor and FlipKey or Booking.com, they're not just listing properties for vacation rentals, they're also listing hotels, so you've got competition there. But just an idea of the numbers and the kind of traffic you're trying to attract.
And also, this is really, really, really critical. Whatever your personality is, you should try and match with the platform. Because I can tell you, I've done all of these platforms. I mean, now that we're into hotels and resorts, we're on, you know, TripAdvisor, Travelocity, Booking.com, Hotels.com, all of those things. And I can distinctly, almost when a guest shows up at the door without looking to see where it came from, I can tell within a few minutes where they came from.
Really?
And it's important to be authentic, I believe, in business, period. And I think that if you're authentic in what you give, And you have to, and in order to do that, you have to have a good understanding of yourself and what really drives you. If you really think about that first, then determine what platform you want to go with. I think it's really important. I had a student, for instance, who this was in the summer last year. She had, I always recommend, start with one platform. Build your reviews on that one platform. So like Airbnb, for instance. If you're going to do Airbnb, go for it. But just stick with that one for a little bit. Why? Because it's an algorithm game. Everything, and we're going to talk about algorithms.
Yep.
But everything is tied into an algorithm that basically is like, you have this many reviews, we're going to stack you up higher, right? So if you're splitting between all these different platforms, A, you're going to get guests that you might not particularly like or want. Like in her case, she ignored my advice. She's not here, is she? And she had ignored my advice, and she had split among different platforms. One, she then started having less success because she's taking the shotgun approach. But the next thing was, on one of the platforms, which is VRBO, they also are part of Expedia now. So it was going out onto Expedia's website as well. Now, who uses Expedia here? Anybody? Yeah. So I'm guessing, like, what percentage of you who use Expedia here, or how many of you use it to get vacation rentals? None. One. All right, we got one over here. So the thing is, when you go to Expedia, you're not looking, most people aren't looking for vacation rentals. Their mindset is hotels, hotels, hotels. So they might stumble on one of these listings, right? But it's actually a vacation rental. They show up and they expect a hotel, or they were just in that mentality. It doesn't mesh. And then your reviews start coming in horribly, horribly, horribly. So please be very cautious with this. And pick a platform that you feel matches, that you can identify with, that you like.
All right, I'm going to start making a little bit of headway. So hotel cleanliness as a service, we're going to cover a little bit later. It's really important to understand what the market can bear as well. Unique properties are great, but you just better make sure you're doing it right. And the customized offerings and services, which we had talked about to get that super host status. Let's go to rehabbing and furnishing comparisons to long-term rentals. And I can't wait to get Shane up, and that's why I want to rush through some of this. You said that the wear and tear is actually easier, so you might not even, if you had to buy a little bit of a rehab, you're not necessarily putting in crazy finish with durability in mind. Would that be fair to say?
I'm getting everything. If I could get everything off the side of the road, I still would do it.
Well, there you go.
But if I had the time.
But to be fair, you're in Beverly Hills and not like Barstow, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. That's fair. So appliances, decor, you really go for the authentic experience. So you're really, especially when you're down in Mexico, you're not necessarily leaning into something that's San Francisco look and feel. You're probably
absolutely
gonna,
not.
People don't go to Mexico to have a non-Mexico experience.
It's all about authentic experiences for me. Like,
okay.
So, I mean, I had so many agents who were just showing me, over the past few weeks, properties, all these modern properties. It took usually 3 or 4 times of me just starting to ignore them. It has to be authentic.
How much is technology playing a role? Is there an expectation or a fear of things like smart locks? Or when I stayed in a place, I found out they had a decibel level monitor in the property. Mm-hmm. So if we got too rowdy, I'd get a text message saying, hey, what's going on? They have IP monitors, so they can tell how many people are actually in the property at one time. Mm-hmm. So if all of a sudden you as a landlord get a notification like, hey, there's 30 people using your Wi-Fi, you can call before the neighbors do.
And this really goes into that delegating thing. I mean, delegate to technology. It's super critical. I know that we feel the same way about this, Iris,
As far as technology on my properties, I just make sure that there's a smart lock of some sort or at least a lock box so they can check in themselves. And some of the smart locks are integrated with Airbnb, for example, where if their stay is coming up, they'll get emailed the code. And then when their stay is over, the code is erased, and then the new guest will get a new code. So there's a lot of things you can automate in that sense, which is worth it because it's a lot less headache for you, and then, you know, a lot less emails, how do I get in, this and that and the other. The other thing that I really like putting in my units is a Nest temperature control, because, you know, the one thing that guests will do is run your AC all day and run your bills up. So if you know if they're running it, you know, too long, you can always just lower it, you know, remotely, which is great. And then the other thing I like also that's helped, and you have to have disclosure on this, but I'll put a camera, like an outdoor camera, so by the entrance or any of the entrances. So that way I can see how many people are entering the unit. So without having a decimal, you know, level monitor or IP address thing, I can already see how many people are coming in. And just that alone is, I think, enough. You don't have to have all that other fancy stuff.
I agree with that.
But, you know, no cameras inside, of course, or if you do, you got to let them know where they are.
That's
but
cool.
Outside is fair enough.
Yeah,
okay.
And as I'm huge on all those things. So I've now switched over to Ring doorbell. Which I was like, had my heels dug in for a long time, but because I needed a count of who was coming and going, and it was only recording during that period. Also, the Arlo cameras, I use those. I go a step above because I'm a big geek, and I'm big on Insteon, so again, creating experience. I have scenes created because when the guests show up, I don't want them coming into a dark home. So I use Insteon, which is a more advanced platform that also ties it. So basically, from my house, I can say, Alexa, turn on the Ponderosa cabin. And then she actually, Alexa actually is tied into our Insteon system. The thermostat goes to a certain setting. All of the lights come to a certain dim level, and a scene is then activated. Water features, all of that stuff comes on. You can even turn refrigerators on if it's in an area that is not utilized as much.
Just imagining in Mexico, turn on Inca Realness, and it's like real hot and humid. And
the mariachi band comes
exactly.
out of the closet. Yeah,
good time. I mean,
that can also backfire because I've stayed in Airbnbs as well where the owners, you know, that were in the same like street, that lived in the same street, and we were renting their rental across the street, they would turn off the jacuzzi like before 10, and, like, you know, with, you know, 10 of us in it, and they're just like, you know, we paid extra, you know, for example,
right.
to have
the pool
heated, and then you're turning remotely off the jacuzzi while we're in it, you know, yeah, so that can back. So be careful. You don't have to be so Nazi about it.
Smart lock. I stayed in Denver in May, and I had a 3-hour dinner and lost the keys while I was out, and I had to get a hotel room anyway in Denver because I had locked myself out, and she had only one key. And the host, she was so rad, she picked me up at 3 in the morning and took me to said hotel. I was so embarrassed. I'm like, she's going to leave me a bad review. Because you get graded as the guest, too. So she was rad.
That's totally the host's responsibility,
I paid for all the keys, but it was an HOA, and I was flying out the next day on a Sunday, and the office didn't even open until 10. I was like, should I sleep in the hallway? Should I? It was really bad. I've had some very strange experiences.
That is not a good experience.
We got to move forward. Anyway, let's talk about systems. Housekeeping, you keep saying that cleanliness is the most important thing, but how do we automate that, and are they really a great substitute for you being on the ground? Like, how do you pick the right people? So let's spend a little bit of time here.
I think this is the most, again, right, like it says, the most critical piece of the experience, and probably the hardest piece to set up, I'm going to say this.
And to keep going in a way that doesn't make you pull your hair out.
But, you know, here's the interesting thing. You know, at first I thought it was going to be really scary to try to get a service to come and clean my Airbnbs on a fly because they're checking out today and someone's checking in, so you need to be there. But then I realized you are booked up so far in advance that I can give my housekeeper months in advance their schedule. And maybe there might be one or two changes because maybe 2 days got filled in somewhere. So actually, their scheduling is very upfront. So
well, it can be, depending on the listing.
So it's also good to have a backup, for sure. But they have services now, again, with this popularity. There's so many services out there that cater specifically to the short-term rentals. And you have GetProperly.com it's actually made this, not made this. Sorry about that, Aaron.
Sorry.
Made this. And they'll take pictures of how they left the place so you can see that it's been put back to whatever your specifications are. And so things that services that actually cater to the short-term business is really good for this situation.
And I think also I always say that this is the most important part of your team. And so, for instance, my first housekeeper who started with me in 2013. Is like part of the family now. So every I'm there every Christmas Eve. It's this big Latino party. It's awesome. I love it. I make sure to with my housekeeping team, I make sure to take really great care of them and help them with anything I can in their lives. I mean, people usually think I was going overboard. But I've now found that if I hadn't done that, I probably would have burnt out, and I probably would have given up a long time ago.
Well, I'll tell them a story real quick. We were working on the chapter. He had come into the office, and one of his tenants was being real sassy and actually quite rude, and the maid was in service. And you corrected them and said, this is part of my team and their person, so I need you to step back a little bit. So he protected the team, and I thought that was really important. And you could tell you talked to your team member later, and I'm sure they appreciate it as well.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, it's just put them first. I always say take care of your first business partner the most, and I consider the housekeepers to be my first business partner.
Let's go on to communications. What does 2-1-24-12 mean? That's Patrick.
Thanks, Iris. Yeah, so basically, communication is one of the most critical aspects of the stay. You have to, there's a formula basically with communication. So as soon as the guest books, or if they send you a message, this is all algorithmically based. Again, this is all math. If you want to win at the Airbnb platform especially, it's a math game. So the system is counting second by second how you respond. It's like, it's like a video game in a lot of ways. So remember that an algorithm is there to try and solve a problem, right? So the problem in here is that the guest wants to stay somewhere. That's their problem. You have a room that you want to rent. So it's trying to solve both those problems. It's going to take the most responsive host who matches against the criteria of the guest the most, and it will pair them up first, right? You're going to show up top of the list. So it's working based off of how you work the platform. So as soon as you can, when a message comes in, you should respond right away. It's ticking in the background. The little Airbnb robot is seeing how fast you respond.
But the platform is really interesting because, you know,
Did she die? did Iris?
Iris is dead.
Here, use his microphone real quick. We'll share.
The platform is really easy when you're on Airbnb because you have an app for that. And so you will know immediately. I love it when I hear my Airbnb ring go off because it usually means money. You know, it doesn't go cha-ching, but it goes bring or something like that. But it means someone has messaged you and you either have an opportunity to accept, decline, or answer a question. And so, yeah.
So, and basically here with this 2-1-24-12, it's basically all we're saying is once they book, I always reply and I say, hey, I am so glad that you've booked and congratulations on welcoming the new baby into the family. Like, this is something that just recently, that could be for you. This is something that just recently happened. I had someone message say, oh, we're coming to LA because our family is welcoming, you know, my daughter-in-law is having a baby. So I always mention that back to them. I restate why they're there, and I say, that's great. And I say, look, you know, please, if there's anything at all that I can do, I want to know what I could do to make your stay better. So, please let me know what that might be. And now that's 2 weeks ahead of their stay. Then when we get up to usually 1 week prior, I'm going to also prod them again. And I'm just going to say, you know, I some great Airbnb experiences that are in the area are this one and this one. You might want to try that. I know that you're here for this certain thing. And so I think this would help you have a great experience. 24 hours ahead of time, I'm going to contact them again. And I'm going to let them know a week before. I'm going to say, you know, the day before, I'm going to send you your lock code. In the meantime, anything at all you can think of, let me know. Then also, after they've checked in, because as I said, I want to get that 5-star review. And I know that if I leave that, if I send them a message right after they check in, I know I'm more likely to get that review. So so all of this, the way this breaks out, it just leads you to getting a 5-star review. Another thing that I do, I try to do every time, and a lot of people don't do this. How many people who have stayed in Airbnb here after they've just booked it have gotten a call from their host? One? How did that stay go? Okay, what did you think about that when you got the phone call? Okay, it was surprising. So surprising in a good way?
How'd you get my number?
Yeah. Christina? You got a text message?
Yeah, texting is good.
There you
I've
go.
Done that.
Yeah. So see, I want to be surprising. Because if I'm surprising, that means that I am going above and beyond. The 5-star hotels do that.
I have a different take on that. Absolutely. Okay, my take on that is this. You know, again, the platform is really good. The Airbnb platform, you know, you have an app on your phone. You can use it on your iPad or at your device, any device. But for me, any communication I have with that tenant, that guest, guest, I want to have on the platform, because there have been situations where, you know, something has happened, and when you've communicated on the platform, there is a recording of everything. So Airbnb will go back and say, oh yeah, she did tell you about this over here on this date. So everything I prefer to go on.
That's a great point and very critical. I mean, and something that I tell people also, always, yeah, make sure that you do, especially if there's any kind of an issue, like I won't text. A lot of times I move it over, especially if I feel a little leery about the guests. But one thing that I'll do, remember, that is your legal chain. Yeah. So when it comes to communication, use it as a log. I will also say to guests, I will say, so there's some situations where it's critical. Like I had a guest come, and this was actually one of my students who I was babysitting her listing. She forgot to have it cleaned. They showed up. Oh my God, I don't want to just communicate with them through there. So I'm going to call. But then afterwards, I say, I'm so glad that we got to speak, and I just wanted to go back over the things we talked about. And I will put that back in a message and say, does this sound okay to you, right? And I go back to them. That is a legal communication. So it's such a great thing to bring up.
Okay.
And so critical.
All right. External providers, obviously you have a pool. You're going to have different kind of team members. Mm-hmm. Is there anything besides cleaning that you find critical that better be on hand and ready to go 24/7?
Besides cleaning.
Do you have a handyman on call or somebody's
depends
number?
Depends again on the listing.
Okay.
Yeah. So I always have two handymen. I have two housekeepers and a plumber. That's my main thing that every listing has to have available. And I do nice things for all of those people. So
I send them movie tickets.
Yeah. Or I'll go and I'll have dinner with them, like things like that, because they're super critical, really important. But it does also depend on what your experience you're creating. So right now in Mexico City, I'm working to curate this entire experience. So there I have to have a driver, I have to have tour guides, all that stuff's handled through our website. But it depends on you.
Okay. I'm going to take the last bullet on the overall great property care is coordinated, consistent, communicative, communicative and comprehensive. So I think that sums up a lot of what we just talked about.
Can I just add a point? You said external providers. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, we have a lot of guests from out of state or out of the country. And so I like to let them know that we do have services like Uber or Lyft because they may not know about it. So you tell them, hey, you know, they're just download this as an app. One of the apps that I find really useful, because oftentimes a lot of they'll ask me, is there a good restaurant, you know, Mediterranean restaurant? I'm like, oh, we have Yelp here, you know, because that's not available in all countries. So at least if you tell them that there's these apps that are local to our area, then that really helps as well.
Okay. Let's go on to page 34 under number 8. Let me get there in the slides. And we're going to talk really briefly about this because I think people can read on this because we've hit a lot of this stuff anyway. Self-management, it's great because you have complete control from soup to nuts, but it's a lot of responsibility from the legal paperwork to checking people in to getting the phone calls at 3 in the morning. You know, there's a lot of hands-on. Obviously, your time is a huge time suck. If you lack experience, you could be doing it wrong and it could screw up your ratings, so you're screwed anyway on these platforms that rely heavily on that. But I do have a lot of software under tools listed if you're going to try to take on some of this stuff on your own. Communications, I did want to ask, textit.in, that's new to me. What's that?
Yeah, so this is, again, just another experience add-on. So I use a system called Textit that ties into, now we use a PMS, which I believe is in here somewhere. So PMS is when you get, so when you get to really 3 or more listings, I believe that you should consider a PMS. PMS stands for Property Management System. So because now we actually have a resort and we have these little hotels, it got to the point where we couldn't handle it all. So the PMS is what these hotels use in the background to change the rates up and down, to say that this room is available, this one isn't, to communicate with guests. It's a CRM, it's a point of sale system, all of these things. So one of the integrated parts of our PMS system, which we use a PMS that's called CheckFront, but I would recommend for someone who's just wanting to really do Airbnb, there's Guesty is a great platform for that. I want to touch the guests as much as I can. I think you guys have figured that out already.
Sounds really wrong. So
well, I want to touch them virtually.
Okay. Thank you.
In an experience way. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. basically, Textit, I have created this. It's this drag and drop text messaging platform. So I have now even set up, like in our PMS, we had all these cabins spread out and we're in wildfire areas. So what if there's a wildfire? We have to call everyone and evacuate them. But actually I set it up so that we have this text messaging system. So I would just change a flag inside of our system for where they were and it immediately sends a text message out to everyone. There is a wildfire evacuation underway. Evacuate now, click here for the map. We had it all, you know, here's where the map is inside of your property. Now that's one way to use it, but the best way, the way that I really love to use it, is that they get a text that says, it's automatic, 24 hours before they check in. We're so excited that you're going to be checking in, and here's the address and all the information. Now afterwards, and during this day even, it can send out a text to them that says, just wanted to check and see how your stay is going. Can you just reply with a 0 or with a 1 to 5? And so if they reply from anything from like 1 being awful, 5 being the best experience of my life, so if they reply with anything from a 1 to like a 3, I get a phone call from the system or I get a text right then that says, this guest is having issues. That's one way that I use it. After the stay as well, they get a text. How would you rate your stay? What's one thing we could have done better? They put it in there, they just type it in. I don't have to be involved, right? It automatically does it, and people like text messaging. It's so easy. It's like right there. So so I think this is just an example of some of the really cool stuff that's out there that you can do. And you know, if you're interested in stuff like that for your, I'm always happy to give the information and
we're covering
resources.
A ton of information in 2 hours. And the fact shared housing could have been its own thing. I want to make sure we get to Shayna, but obviously you can tell. I'm just curious, real fast, because you're obviously more advanced and you're doing quite a bit of these. Are you doing any of this outside of the platforms, or do you really like leaning on the platforms like Airbnb and VRBO?
That's a good question. I would say now I'm probably 40% on the Airbnb platform, and the rest is direct through our website. But remember, I've evolved.
Okay.
You know, I took it from just having Airbnb properties to now I'm doing hotels and resorts.
Right.
So at some point you get to where you have to bring in these other platforms.
Okay. I was just curious. I do want to cover the beware section of this real quick. Late bookings. Why is late bookings a concern?
Okay. I love this. I always like to give tips to my fellow Airbnbers, you know, some things that I look out for. So oftentimes you'll get, you know, I'll have like maybe a 2-day stay between two long stays. And, you know, you want that booked. And so oftentimes you might get a last minute booking is what I call it. I'm always a little weary about that. If I get a last minute booking, I will delve a little bit longer or deeper into why they're booking last minute. And so, you know, you do the communication through the platform and you just ask for an explanation. If the explanation is good enough, then yeah, no problem, right? If they're already well reviewed and have a good rating as a guest as well, and if it's a legitimate, no problem. But always just be, you know, it's a red flag, so just be aware of those, because that can happen. I've also had situations where parents are, you know, through they're communicating, they're saying, oh, we're booking this for our son or daughter.
And the other way around,
but I'll tell you why, what the difference is. Usually when the parents are booking for the kids, it's because the kids have hijacked the parents' account.
Oh.
Okay, so they're trying to like book something so they can have their party at your Airbnb.
And if they're still oftentimes living with the parents, you can send them a letter. I can buy your house.
But secondly, I've also had kids book for their parents because they're traveling from, you know, wherever it may be, Europe or China or Asia or something, and they don't know how to use the platform. So I've had kids book for their parents, which always has turned out pretty good. But the other way around, I've had problems.
It can be a nightmare still.
Same city or near city bookings, be very, very careful. I mean, I've literally had, I'll give you an example. Someone came that lived in Santa Ana that wanted to book my place in Orange to go to Disneyland. That was their reason for their stay. So I called them out on it. I'm like, why do you want to stay in Orange when you live in Santa Ana to go to Disneyland? And he's like, well, my mom won't let me, you know, have party at our house or whatever. I mean, literally, they tell you the truth. You just have to ask, and you're just like, no. Right? Or sometimes I've had situations where they got in a fight with their spouse, and you don't want that to come near Airbnb because guess who can come after them or, you know, cause more drama in your place. Mm. So just be careful for things like that. And then I also, I'm cautious, not that I won't take them, but, you know, on the Airbnb platform, it's really important to get a review, but also review your guests because, you know, other hosts will look and see if they have reviews. So when I have a guest that doesn't have any reviews, I always take a second look, but, you know, if their profile comes in and they have verifications, all the other verifications come in, then I'm okay with being their first, let's say, experience or whatnot. And then the one big, big thing I always say no to are, we're here to film.
No.
So we're not
going to
spend the night, but we're going to have our crew there, and we're going to use your place for, you know, 6 hours or 8 hours, and we'll pay you the full whatever.
No big studios are calling you to film your properties?
No big studio. I mean, it could be legit, but I just don't want to take that chance because I don't want
yeah.
porn.
That one's a big one. The filmmakers one, I literally get two or three a week because I have a property in Hollywood. And the last time I did it, it's $600 a day. I did it at $600 for a weekend, and I just wasn't thinking. I thought, oh, yeah, that'll be fine. I was in Mexico. I was busy. Like, oh, yeah, $600. Yeah. And it actually ended up costing me because I had to then... I had an issue with the neighbors, and I had to send someone to babysit, and they had to be there on site. And I paid $200 to that. Yikes. I paid my housekeeper. I ended up losing money. So, I mean, hey, if you can be there, but charge $1,500 a day at least.
Okay. I'm going to go through the listing services. So if you decide maybe the upfront, because, you know, part of the algorithm game is getting in touch with people as they're trying to book and being very responsive, there is sort of like an in-between between trying to manage it on your own and then going to a full property manager. One is the listing services, which will handle everything up to the point where they book. And then after that is all you. So there's sites like I worked a lot with Evolve, who really helped put this together for me, which was great. What does it cost? Is it 10% of the booking price? Is that typically what it is?
At least, minimum.
At least, okay. So you just need to know that it costs money, but there are things out there that can help you with that process. The problem is you won't learn what works. Testing is not always possible. It's their platform, so if you're getting reviews, it might not carry with you if you decide not to list with them ever again. Evolve, they actually do a lot of the work. They don't get paid until they get you bookings, which is cool, and they help you set up with a photography and video and all that. I think they started charging for that possibly, but there's added services on top of that. So there are options. The property manager itself under 30, the pros is it's going to be very hands-off. The entire process is handled, but they take a lot of money. I've heard it really range from 30 or 50%. So if you decide like halfway through, maybe I shouldn't have bought this rental, and this is not like a regular 10% landlording fee. It gets a lot more expensive. So you better know that it's coming.
I think that's really good if like you were going to do stuff like out of the country or...
Right. Right.
And the biggest thing though is just remember that, like you said, Aaron, that you don't get the listing afterwards. So... you know, ask about that up front, because if you have 30 reviews, your reviews are gold. Your reviews actually are what make you your value for the listing. And so if you're not going to get that and you move away from them, you're starting from scratch again.
Yep.
That's not fun.
So in the trends category, we're going to go on to number 9. Just a few things. 31% of travelers want to bring their pets. So when we're talking a little bit about niches, you might not be thinking about that, but they want to bring their pets. A lot of them have... diet issues, which I was surprised about. 43% of kids said they would prefer to go on vacation rather than receive a physical gift. So the kids are influencing some of the parents, and obviously,
fascinating.
Yeah. 33% of travelers, destinations within 250 miles of their home. 6 in 10 households have dietary restrictions. That's what it was. So maybe if you want to have a niche as a gluten-free environment, that's always a possibility, but how you track that, I don't know. But this was my favorite. Alternative living experiences is one of the fastest growing segments. Barns, 55% increase. Houseboats up 40, and tree houses up 30. And
yeah, these are the ones. Like I said, this is what gets you to be the top. I mean, I've been, those of you in here that know me, you've probably heard for a while me saying that I want to build a shoe that people can live in. That's why.
What's the nursery rhyme? What's that from?
The old woman who lived.
Old lady. Does it come with an old lady in it?
I just want to be number one on Airbnb. That's all I want.
You've got the top 5 there. I don't think that's going to be very interesting, but just so you have it. We've talked a lot about the guest and visitor experience and the algorithms. We've talked about that, the great listing. Creating the own site, we covered that briefly, and that's really a marketing thing, and it's more advanced. Our goal here today is just to sort of get you to decide if you even want to pursue this more. We're actually, I think this is an advanced beginner, right? We're throwing a lot
at
you.
What do you guys think? Advanced beginner?
Yeah.
You know, can I just share something on this? You know, this is something that Patrick shared with me on my Airbnb listing. So for those of you that already have listings or are looking to get into the Airbnb platform, one tip that he gave me that I thought was just miraculous was, you know, again, everything works on Airbnb as on an algorithm. And the one tip he gave me was just go into your calendar, whether there's any activity or not, or if you have bookings or not, just go and touch it every day. Not that you, I mean, you'll go into your calendar to either adjust your pricing or respond to like a guest inquiry or accept a reservation, but just by simply going into your calendar every day and touching it, whether you do nothing to it or not, just touching a date or whatever, increases your visibility in the through the algorithms that they use, and then will then show when people are searching in your area, you'll show up at the top of the list. And it was I was so surprised. Just that little tip really helped a lot of my bookings on Airbnb.
Okay, because a lot of that is really getting into some advanced marketing stuff. We've talked a lot about under number 11, the 5-star review, but let's talk about the super host and what makes a super host quickly.
I'll let Iris talk about that because I'm no longer a super host.
Uh-oh.
Well, again, you know, Airbnb has a ton of algorithms, and one of them that you can be rated on is called a super host. And there's a certain number of things that you have to qualify to become a super host, and you get like a little badge. And again, if you are a super host, your listings will rise to the top as someone searching in your area. And so to become a super host, you have to review at least 50% of your guests. Right, so you have to leave them a review.
And they have to, 50% of them have to leave you a review.
Yes, and they have to leave you a review. You have to respond. Remember, he was saying that they count how how fast you respond. So you need to respond at least 90% of the time. Zero cancellations. Now, there are occasions where you may have to cancel because something has happened. So they will be lenient so long as you have a valid response. But you can't just cancel because you want to stay in it that night or whatever. So zero cancellations. You have to have 5-star review 80% of the time and a 4.8-star review or better on all the categories. So you have cleanliness, you know, the space, communication, all that stuff. So if you can meet all that, and they'll judge you on a quarterly basis, you will get super host status. Now, it's pretty easy to get if you just stay consistent and, you know, just, you know, watch what you're doing on the site. And again, it just makes for better visibility on their booking platform.
And the reason I'm not super host anymore is because in this part, so zero cancellations, actually what happened to me was I had a guest who was coming for some rave, which I found out later. And this was one of our mountain properties. And they said basically that they showed up and that we weren't, that there was no one there to check them in. Even though we were there the whole time, we have the cameras, we know that no one had ever showed up. The guest was lying. But what happened was I had an hour to basically answer Airbnb calling. They called at 6:30 in the morning on a Sunday. And I had an hour to respond, and I called literally 4 minutes after that hour had elapsed. And so I then had a cancellation thanks to this guest. So I think next month I'll go back to Superhost again. But
wow.
But so don't get super caught up on it. I think that some people might end up, they have the Superhost badge, and if you lose it, you're going to end up crying. And literally, I know people who cry over these things. So, yeah.
Just so you know, it exists, too. On page 41, we've created, and this is about four of us together. Everybody's been looking at this, the vacation rental cleaning list. You can download that and customize it all you want if you want to.
Which I'm now using. Thanks, Aaron.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's such a great
list. It's really good, yeah.
And then page 42 and 43 are the amenities and supplies checklist if you're looking to set one up in the different rooms. And then I did end up going to Airbnb because Airbnb, there's now Airbnb Plus if you want to be super fancy. And so out of August of this month, those are the things that they're looking for: design, comfort, if it's well equipped and well maintained. And I'll let you thumb through those, but helpful, and you can download those on the portal in Word and tweak them however you want. We are going to probably skip now a little bit to Plan B because I think it's super important.
Yeah.
So Shayna, if you want to start making your way up here, I actually met Shayna because of a nonprofit event because I'm part of a community. She got roped in without knowing it to being a candidate for Mardi Gras event. So she was voluntold to raise money for a nonprofit, and we started to get to know each other. Come to find out, she's been buying property since she was 21. She's an assistant principal at a local elementary school because that's her passion. She's getting her doctorate degree at UC Irvine, but somehow she finds time to be an entrepreneur, just a really cool person, and she does the shared housing model and has been doing it for a really long time. So when the accessory dwelling unit issue becomes more of an issue and the cities have to write ordinances, ADUs were not meant to be there for the vacation rentals. So I think shared housing is probably going to be your next bet. So if you did it wrong, at least you don't have to go all the way to a long-term rental. So this is under number 14, the backup plan. And some of these, on page 39 on the right, you're going to see four companies that I've listed: Common, Ollie, Node, and Dwell. We did a radio show earlier this year with Common. Their whole goal is to create a very highly designed, curated experience for the engineer market in very hot markets like New York, San Francisco, Denver. Fully furnished for $1,600 to $2,300, you're going to get a room in a 3 to 5 bedroom. It's fully furnished. Sometimes it comes with cleaning every week. It comes with internet. One price does it all. Some of these companies even provide basics like salt, olive oil. I mean, it's crazy. Every company approaches this very differently. So I thought it was brilliant. I was just fascinated. They don't even care about amenities. They're not focused on amenities like pools and workout rooms. They're creating an experience where it's like, oh, we're bringing in your local council member. So they really try to get you to hang out just because you're creating a really beautiful experience. And then I'm setting them up as high and mighty. And Shayna does the exact opposite.
Yeah, I was like, that's not me.
That's not. So we had dinner, a very long dinner, a couple weeks ago. And we talked a little bit about how different it is to that. So you want to talk a little bit about your model, the size, and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not looking for furniture on the side of the road. However, I have found that OfferUp, Craigslist, Goodwill, There's a couple of different thrift markets that I go to get the furniture, because with people coming in and out, you never know how they're going to treat it, especially as a rental. So I found that that basic formula has worked for me. I'm also from Riverside, and so we have a lot of universities. So what I found was when I rented to a family, the kids sometimes, or just family dynamic, you have a lot of the carpet replacement that you have to go in and paint. It's just the wear and tear is absolutely high. When I started renting the rooms, it actually started because someone just needed a room, and I thought, oh, well, I have one. I'll buy a house, and then you can rent a room, and then maybe we can get a couple others. And so I did this experiment of I'm going to put it on Craigslist as just a condo and see what I get for $1,500, and then I'm going to put it as individual rooms. It was three bedroom, two bath. What I found was I could rent the smaller rooms for $650 each, and then the master bedroom for $900. So instead of the $1,500, I'm making $2,100, $2,100, $2,200. So it worked out really well. And then I don't have the wear and tear that I normally do. And I don't have, I have internet, obviously, because a lot of times we're looking for graduate students or younger professionals. I have also some that they're just having a hard time getting a house right now. And so they need just a place to kind of build their savings. Also have people who are maybe going through a divorce or if they lost their house, things of that sort. So you have the, I'd say typically my audience is 20 to 40. And they rent the room. So you don't have that college experience of, oh my gosh, they're going to come in and ruin it, you know, not the fraternity people. They're in their room, and they're renting the room, and they don't have that common area where they're just hanging out. So I don't have the TV in the living room. When I told Aaron that,
I about passed out. It made me laugh, because I was like, well, what kind of TV? She thought, TV? I don't have a TV. I don't want them hanging out in the main room. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's a very different experience from somebody like a common, where that's their whole thing is. What's the average stay, would you say?
So the contract that I find is comfortable for me is 6 months, and then we go to month. So that typically works, because when you're renting rooms, you want to make sure that they are able to, there aren't any issues, right? Because you have different people. Like I said, I typically go for the smaller places as well. I have a couple condos. And HOA, I was laughing earlier, I told Aaron, my loophole is just getting on the board. So that way I can help control the different regulations. But so in those smaller 1,500, 1,700 square foot homes, you have three bedrooms, like I said, four bedrooms maybe. I'm looking for people to make sure that they're able to just be responsible, respectful, and they can cohabitate together. So the 6 month is nice, because if not, then I can ask them to leave, or we go to month, and so it's a lot easier. Once you get to the year, I find that it's harder for the eviction. I've never actually had to do an eviction, thank goodness, knock on wood, but that's been something that's been comfortable for us.
So when it comes to laws and regulation, you can't say, you know, this is all women, this is all men, this is all, so shared housing is a little bit tricky. You have to still comply with all the rules around renting property. Have you had any problem, like, do you have a house meeting before you put these three people together that have never met?
So, interesting question. Yeah, whenever I'm showing, say, we have one room available, then I do let the other tenants know, and so they're able to come when we're doing the walkthrough with the individual, and then I obviously do all the background checks and everything as well. And I think in rental properties, you also have to have that kind of spidey sense, right, that internal just, is this going to work? And so luckily my gut has been accurate for the most part, and so I haven't had too bad of problems. And what I find is if there are, then at that 6 month, then they find somewhere else.
Because they're feeling uncomfortable as well. What, and the
actually hasn't been the problem. I've actually had people like, ooh, can you know my boyfriend, girlfriend move in, and that gets more complicated, so.
Yeah, you said that. You actually did that. You allowed it to happen, and you end up charging even more, and they said yes.
Yeah, I wanted them to not, because then you're creating, okay, we have a couple here, they're going to dominate that housing environment. And so I actually I gave them an outlandish number, thinking they would say no and go find an apartment. And it worked the opposite. They said yes. So it did work, but eventually they did where it was kind of dominating. But I also find, like she talked about the host, you have someone or you just have more eyes on the property. And so I don't have to intervene much, but I always know what's going on because someone's more willing to tell me. And I always encourage them and talk them through how to talk to each other, maybe if they're having an issue. But with the cleanliness and things, we do have a checklist that they use. And again, it's that responsibility piece. And I can do walkthroughs regularly. You don't have the cleaning that we would, like with a family. Like I said, when someone moves out, it's just the room that you're looking at. So you steam clean the carpets.
And you don't furnish the bedroom, so they're coming with their own.
I do not.
So the only thing that you're, how much are you providing in, so maybe the main space and basics in the kitchen?
Yes, just basics in the kitchen. There is a list that is in there that's pretty typical. You can find stuff at Ross for very cheap, like plates, you know, utensils. Couches, like I said, OfferUp is amazing. Go on Craigslist, you can get stuff that looks new for fairly cheap. And then just kind of a kitchen table, very basic amenities.
And what's the longest time somebody stayed with you?
I have someone that's been there for 2.5 years now.
Okay, so they still stay quite a while.
Which is nice because okay. Then I, like I said, I have the inside scoop all the time.
In 39, I've just listed the pros of a lot of the different things that shared housing could be, but it's going to be very unlikely that cities and municipalities will be able to come close to regulating this. It's going to actually probably be a good thing. The only thing that you have to watch out for that it has it in Riverside, you're only allowed so many unrelated parties in the same house without having to get a permit. So you still might have to get a permit. You just have to be careful and know that that exists. You can create your own experience. So everything from monthly cleaning, if you want to get really fancy and you're trying to create, you know, I don't know, maybe you, it really depends on the town. We have 4 universities in Riverside with a lot of teachers coming in and out. You could market it as such and surround it with services, charge even more and see, depending on what neighborhood you're in, it could really, really work.
I will say even with that, UCR, because I'm in education, so we have a lot of tutors, and they were coming to me saying, do you know of anywhere I can rent a room? Because at the university, they charge $750 for a shared room. Mm-hmm. So, I mean.
And is it typically the first time? I've done that in New York City. I had the weirdest roommate sets. If you saw the 3 of us together, you'd be like, what? And I lived there for a couple years. It worked. When they're coming in, you're attracting, it doesn't sound like, is there an average age? You said from 20 to 40. That's a really wide range.
It is a wide range because I have multiple ones, so it just depends. And like okay. I said, they do come and go. But it's the younger professional.
Okay.
Or graduate program students, because like I said, we have a lot of universities.
And how are you marketing all those?
Word of mouth now. I'm finding that I'm buying houses because someone needs a room. And then, like I said, I just put it on Craigslist, and it's unbelievable. Like I said, the initial experiment of I'm going to put this as a house, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and then I'm going to put it as just rooms. And there's an overwhelming response just for rooms, so I never have a problem.
All right. We covered so much ground in 2 hours, and I have 3 minutes left, and if it's okay, I'd love to open it up for maybe a few questions. Mm-hmm. Questions, anybody?
You know, can I just say, I mean, I think this is such a perfect plan B. You know, with all the regulations changing, I really recommend if you have an opportunity to do Airbnb, experience it. It's pretty awesome. You can make pretty decent money or a lot of money in a very short period of time. So it's exciting. And in the event something should happen because regulations change, this is such a good solution. You already have a property that's totally furnished. And what if you just do or create a co-living space? And obviously, we have a generation that really likes this sharing thing, this 20 to 40. You know, one of the things also I just thought of when you were talking about that, you know, what some of our units are close to St. Joseph's Children's Hospital, and I know there's like a lot of traveling nurses, and, you know, and for them to get, you know, a place for just, you know, this 30, 60, 90 days is really hard because they have to sign year leases. So this is like the perfect solution, and there is a demand for something like this.
Very Absolutely. Smart around hospitals, especially because patients or family that needs to stay yes. close for extended stay. Yep.
I've had a lot of success with nurses.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of PAs as well.
Sure. Got it. Okay. Good afternoon. Shut down.
Dead mic. Here.
Shut down. Okay. Just ask, okay. Yeah. We'll repeat the question.
The question I have is for your underwriting. Basically, you started off with the master lease. That's how you got started. How much of that is still existing for you doing this master leases versus proposition purchase? And then what's your underwriting?
So, I mean, for basically, the question was how much of our business model today is master leasing and how much are our owned properties. So I would say that, well, up until recently, we've been doing all owned properties. But now, like, as I'm going into Mexico City now, it's all master leasing again. So I really like the fact that we can master lease and get into things at a very low rates and establish relationships with the property owners, the building owners, and then also at the same time we're showing proof of concept. So it really depends. It's up and down. I like the low barrier to entry and just a small investment that I'm getting the same amount of cash flow, right? And so I don't necessarily look at it as a certain cap rate. I look at it usually per door, how much I'm going to want to make. That's just an easier way because it can be more difficult to figure out your cap rates. So so pretty much I say $1,000 a door. So I'm looking for $1,000 a door, and that means the door inside as well. So like if I have a 3-bedroom, I'm going to be looking for $3,000 of profit. And it just depends on the market. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Oh, sorry, over there. Since the mic.
If you could just maybe quickly address if you have any properties that are outside of cell phone range generally.
I do, yes. I've had some hellish experiences with that. I actually, like, for a brief and scary period, decided that I would do this, like, camping experience where the, like, it was 30, 40 minutes from a cell and get a satellite phone. because it can be absolute hell. You're driving up and down the mountain trying to find the guests, and like every car that stopped along the side, you're like, is it them? Yeah.
No, but can I have a ride? And then it's a big bus. Yeah, that's awkward.
So it's a whole other thing. Yeah. But I mean, those are great experience properties. You can pivot that into an experience, and you could charge a heck of a lot more for it. For the hey, I'm serious. The Malibu Dream Airstream, there's no cell phone signal up there.
You know, it's very well disclosed. If you look at the Malibu Airstream experience, you know, it's people that rent there want to be off the grid.
Except for the rats. That's not well disclosed. You have to read the reviews.
Shayna, question for you. How do you handle the aspect of privacy and security for the people within your shared housing?
Good question.
Have locks on their each individual door? How do you change the locks as people go in and out? That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a great question. Doorknobs are very cheap. And so we do. We have locks for each individual door.
With a key on the outside of the bedrooms?
The bedrooms,
So the bedrooms are keyed.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
This I mean, I also have a key, obviously, so if there's an emergency, then I can get in. But that just provides the security. But believe it or not, we don't typically have any problems. A lot of the renters, once they get to know each other, they'll leave their rooms unlocked as well, because in case they need to get in for any reason.
Is there any fire code about having locked bedroom doors that you know of?
Not that I've, no.
So long as you have egress.
Yeah, you just can't have a double deadbolt on anything. Yeah.
Okay, right here, one more.
This is a good follow-up on that. So any special riders to your lease for sexual harassment policy, concerns around that with regard to with the shared housing, and then also with regard to special insurance needs?
So I still have renter's assurance, and they will cover it. As for the sexual harassment and things, I work with an attorney because I do have multiple houses, and so the contract's very clear, and so it's very clear on what's appropriate and what's not. I have not experienced anything, but I have a very tight contract that would cover those things. I don't know that I have a special writer or addendum, but it's a very extensive contract that includes and addresses that.
Yeah. All right, we have got to move on the back of the chapter, page 59. I've included some tax information because depending on if you're renting bedrooms or we'll do one more question after I cover this, whether you're doing bedrooms or you're doing the whole place, that might be treated different tax-wise. So I included that. You can read through it.
That was really good, Aaron, actually.
Nerd alert, right?
Yeah.
One more question?
Thanks. Shannon, can you recommend the background check company service you use?
I go through a real estate company, Wesco, and so it's just a $35 charge, and they give me an extensive, see if they've been late on anything and if there's any sort of red flags.
Very cool. Thank you so much for helping me put this crazy chapter together.
Thank you, Aaron.
Being here today. Appreciate it. All right. Yay.